time now for the garden conversation. And who do we have here today? We have Melissa.
And Jerry. Welcome back, Jerry.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the spring.
Oh.
Gorgeous spring.
This is amazing. Well, this is a busy time for gardeners. So all you gardeners that are out there listening, you now have permission to sit down for 15 minutes and listen to the garden conversation. This is a time that can be really tempting to get out there and do too much and risk damage to your plants. So be careful, listen to the weather reports, watch the wind. And when you get ready to put your transplants in the ground, the late Art Jess, had a wonderful tip that you wait until the dandelions are blooming, not just up, but actually blooming. And then that's an indication that the soil is warm enough for your transplants and that they won't get shocked when you put them in the ground. I've watched that tip for a few years, and it seems to really work. So for the gardeners out there, too, another thought, an old adage, the best fertilizer is a farmer's footsteps. So take some time every day, walk around, look at all your plants, see what needs to be done, and then do it.
Do it.
Yeah, yeah. Because there's too much to put on a list. I just finished reading a book called The Nature Fix. It's in the new section at the library. It's called The Nature Fix, Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative by Florence Williams. And it's a terrific book. I recommend it to all of you.
Especially gardeners.
And especially gardeners. And anybody likes to get outside.
Yeah, and everybody does around here. I have a funny thing about gardeners. A number of years ago, I went to a new master gardener group in Louisiana. And when I came back from the meeting, Gene said, well, how'd you like the meeting? And I said, it was fun. I said, they're really a bunch of very nice people. And she looked at me with this very questioning look, and she said, what'd you expect? They're a bunch of gardeners. So I think it really is true. I don't know if peaceful people become gardeners or gardening makes you become patient, because some things you just can't rush.
You can't rush it.
Exactly. We do want to remind you there's a plant sale this Saturday coming up day after tomorrow from 10 to 2 at the school cafeteria. This is a chance for growers to sell their extra starts and for people to buy starts from local growers. We'll do the table set up at 9. We hope the people that want to sell will come in about 9:30. The sale will run from 10 to 12 and will be cleaned up and out of there by 1. So we had a couple of questions from listeners. One was on pollinating in greenhouses. So, Jerry, what can you tell us about that?
Well, the good thing about a lot of the plants that you put in greenhouses, especially tomatoes and peppers, most of them are self-pollinating, which means that sometimes even before the blossoms open, the fertilization has taken place. But if you go along with the plants, this is the nightshades, the eggplant, and tomatoes and peppers, and just tap them, maybe blow on them with your breath a little bit. They will fertilize themselves, and you don't have to bother with that. Beans and peas are the same way, as they will often fertilize. Almost all of them will fertilize themselves. Plants like cucumbers is a little bit different. Many varieties of cucumbers are parthenocarpic. If you grow heirlooms, they are not parthenocarpic, and that just means that they fertilize themselves. And there are a lot of the long, slender cucumbers that are, if small or no seeds, that are available online, and you can buy those seeds and plant them, and you don't have to worry about fertilizing. Melissa's going to talk about the fun of squash plants.
Yeah. One thing on tomatoes that I find really works is to just shake the plants gently every day so that you're basically simulating wind. Yeah, that works out fine. Yeah, and you can always look at the packet on the seeds or in the seed catalogs, and look for ones that are self-pollinating for the cucumbers, too, because that certainly does make it easier. But squash, if you have a really tightly enclosed greenhouse and you don't have natural insects in there that are going to do the pollinating for you, then things like squashes and pumpkins and those sorts
melons.
Of things, melons, all need to be pollinated. So what you need is an artist's brush, just a really fine little artist's brush. Mm-hmm. And then you need to be able to tell the difference between a male flower and a female flower. The male flower will be on a tall, skinny stem. And if you look inside, you will see the stamen, which has the pollen on it.
Okay.
The female flower will be on a short, stockier stem. And if you look inside, you will see the pistil.
What's a pistil
the
look like?
The pistil looks like basically a bowl that's
gotcha.
Designed to hold the pollen.
The pollen, right?
Yeah, so you can think of a pistil pack and mama if you to remember the female, and the stamen is the male part of
okay.
the flower. Another way to think about it is the short stalk provides the strength to support the fruit, what the squash or the melon. Where the long, skinny one, this stem for the male flower, mm-hmm. gets the pollen out so that the pollen can be distributed more.
And the female plant will actually have what looks like a baby melon or squash or pumpkin
yeah.
on it at the base of the flower.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit of swelling of the ovary there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's really important to get the pollen when it's very fresh. So early in the morning, as soon as the flowers open, get out there with your painter's brush, scoop up a little bit of the pollen on the painter's brush, take it over to the female part, and just spread it there on the little pistil.
Okay.
And you'll get good pollination.
And this is for squash, pumpkins, melons?
Melons, yeah.
Okay.
And non-hybrid cucumbers, the heirloom cucumbers, you need to do the same thing, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And another thing you can do is break the pistil off of the male flower and actually touch it up against the open female flower. Mm-hmm. And that'll do the same thing. It avoids the paintbrush. It's easier, though.
Yeah, works for me anyway. Yeah, so that's important to do. And if you don't do that pollinating, you won't get any squashes or melons.
Hmm.
Jerry, when and how to plant potatoes?
Plant them now. Potatoes tolerate cold ground. If you have a thermometer, you can go down to 45, 46 degrees to plant them. And what you really do is you dig sort of a ditch or a tunnel that's about 6 inches down, especially if you have friable soil. If you have soil that's really compact, you probably ought to raise the bed up so that the plant will have time, will have a space to grow out into. And you make a tunnel. If you do this in a container, put about 4 inches of soil on the bottom of the container. And then put the cut potato. If it's a small potato, you can plant the whole potato. And if not, then you cut the potato in 1.5 or 2 inch sections with 1 or 2 eyes, and you plant them about a foot apart in the tunnel, and then you cover them with about 4 inches of soil. You let them grow, and what'll happen is it'll send out shoots, and when the shoots get to be about 8 or 10 inches tall, you cover up about half of it and let them grow more. And when they grow more, you cover up more. And when they grow more, you cover up more, leaving always about 6 or 7 inches of green above the ground. And then sometime later on during the year, they'll start to turn yellow and fade and begin to fall, and that's when you harvest them. This is shortly after they flower.
Okay, and when they start to flower, then you can rob one potato per plant if you want to. Now, Mardell and Rebecca last week also talked about planting potatoes, and they talked about planting them whole rather than cutting them. But, Jerry, you cut yours?
I cut them and let the wound heal for about 24 hours. And especially if you have a whole lot of eyes on the potato, you I don't want that much concentrated in one area. But if it's a small potato, you only have 1 or 2 eyes. But if it's a big potato, you ought to cut it into pieces and let the potato heal a little bit, it diminishes the opportunity for infection to occur. before it has a chance to sprout. It's probably not critical, but it's probably significant.
Okay. So letting them basically dry for 24 hours or so. Yeah. So there you have kind of different ideas from Mardell and Rebecca and versus what Jerry's talking about for growing potatoes. And I think that's an important kind of thing. There's lots of different ways to do things. You need to find what works for you and kind of keep track of what's been successful and what hasn't. One thing you do want to make sure of is to not use any diseased potatoes, because you'll just spread the disease. And if you get potatoes from the grocery store, a lot of times they've been treated so they won't sprout. So you don't want those. and then at the end of the season, set some of your best potatoes aside and use those as your seed potatoes for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So hopefully that's enough, and it's time to go do that, but not until the show's over. We had another question from a listener on starting a new garden. Actually, a couple of questions about that. What do you do?
Well, that's a whopper, because probably the most important thing to do is figure out what it is that you like to grow. If you are really an active gardener and you like to grow things and stir around, then you probably do want to have a bunch of annuals and vegetables, mm-hmm. and flowers that you're going to be able to tend to a lot. On the other hand, if you like flowers but you don't really like to mess with them very much, then probably perennials, bushes, are a better thing for you. And look around the your yard and look at what gets sun and what doesn't, because trying to grow vegetables or blooming flowers in the shade is really very difficult, and you need some sun.
Yeah, so we're both dealing with coughs, mm-hmm. here this morning. Find a gardener who is close by you, who has a successful garden, somewhat similar kind of soil, similar mm-hmm. kind of exposure, and go talk to them. As Jerry was alluding to Jean's comments earlier, gardeners love to talk about their gardens. They'll probably bring you over and show you things and maybe give you some starts and so on. So, mm-hmm. yeah, that's an important thing to do. It was interesting coming into the Chilcat Center today. We were looking at the wall that faces east, right by the parking lot.
Right.
And right up against it, lots of things are making mm-hmm. tremendous progress. This is a great time to go look at your garden to see how different exposures are working, because those things that are south facing or, you know, are up against walls are really a lot warmer, whereas things that are more in the open or more north facing are mm-hmm. much slower.
Right.
So, yeah, the north facing things last longer, but they're slower to get there. So pay attention to that.
And there are dandelions in flower right now, but most of them are up against a wall somewhere.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So we're getting to that time.
Getting there, but
not within
quite.
The next couple of days or so. The other thing to do is to pay attention to wind. Mm-hmm. And what your prevailing wind is. In the summer, the prevailing wind here is mostly from the south, so you want to make sure your garden's in a wind-protected area. And the other thing we will talk about another time is building soil and building raised beds.
Yay.
So, yeah.
Fun topics.
Yeah, plant sale on Saturday.
Don't
see you there.
Don't forget that. Yeah, and that's happening at the, where is it?
It's at the school cafeteria.
Okay. All right, and you want growers to be there by 9:30?
Right.
And that's first come, first serve on the tables. And if you have any questions, they can call you.
They could call me 766-2185.
All right. Well, thank you so much,
okay.
Jerry
thank you.
And
thank
Melissa.
You. Thank you, Joni.
Have a great day.
Thank you.